morning, Cascadia. This is KBOO Portland, the voice of the resistance. We're down here this morning at the ICE encampment, day 22. I'm going to be speaking shortly with Stephanie, who's been up all night working, documenting, and celebrating what the resistance looks like. There's been little to no real feet on the ground participation, really across the country. So it's a wonder and a delight. It's heartening. It's exhilarating to be here and to see the energy and feel the heartbeat of activism. So this is a KBOO Portland, and we're going to be speaking now with Stephanie, who's been here at the KBOO a media site. And so, Stephanie, you've been down here all night. Can you give us a timeline of the action throughout the night?
It started when a mother came in talking about, well, crying about how her husband was being detained, that she had his legal documentation, and that the person at the front desk who was supposed to send it off absolutely refused to. He was just playing video games all day. And she had been trying for weeks. So he's now been shipped off to Tacoma. This what was happening last night, the reason why I stayed up is we were watching for the GEO bus, and that's GEO Group, the for-profit prison that runs the... Well, I think that they're responsible for the massive detainment center in Tacoma, which is the biggest in the nation. And
not
a good place.
Do you have any idea how many people are being held there?
I don't have an idea,
no. Something like 1,500,
it's a lot. A ridiculous amount of migrants that are being detained, yeah. And very cruelly so, they don't get the same treatment as regular prisoners. Like, I keep seeing the counterpoint that it's like, oh, you don't get mad when they separate regular families and send them to jail for whatever, drugs or prostitution or who knows what, but you know what, they get treated humanely when they're in jail. These people don't.
It's a very different process.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no reason for this because these people aren't criminals.
When you say she had legal documents and she'd been trying for weeks, well, what sort of documents?
I'm not certain about what form, but she had it. She kept showing it to me and showing it to us and saying, like, I'm trying to get in here. I've been trying so hard. Please don't let them take him. They claimed to have taken him last night. We stayed up watching all night. The only van that we've seen is the one that we had stopped temporarily this morning. Yeah, and so she claims that this morning there was a different person there who hadn't been there all week, and we're wondering if it's because we drew out everybody who had been. A ridiculously large number of cars went into the building this morning, more so than usual. And so we're not sure if that's the reason why she had the opportunity to actually get these documents faxed. It was just a fax that needed to be sent that would have kept this man from detainment and kept him from being torn from his four kids. So she's off to court to get him out. We're praying for her. She's in our thoughts. I've had four of my friends arrested trying to stop this van, and I got covered in pepper spray, and one of them had to be taken to the medical tent because he was completely doused and he was bright orange. That was all over a guy who refused to send a fax, but, we're going to do whatever we can to help these people and make it happen, because this morning it got sent. Whether we did it or not, it got sent.
It did.
Yes.
That's good. And the journey begins with one step. So what about getting names of people and then tracking their whereabouts so we know where they get sent, so that there's some way of monitoring and maintaining some degree of police or ICE accountability?
I feel like the ones who have family that are either permanent residents or American citizens have a much higher chance of being tracked and everyone knowing where they are, what they're doing. She was putting money in his bank account so he'd have something for the prison. Oh. But The ones that we really worry about are the families that were separated under the zero tolerance policy at the border upon arrival or within hours or days of arrival, and there being no documentation for these kids. That's the reason why we even started this camp. And everyone, I mean, I've been on this for years, since before these occupations started. My sister's studying to be an immigration lawyer for these reasons, and I'm here because I don't have it in me to go through law school right now, so I'm doing what I can. But you know, we're here for them, and yeah, those people who don't have voices and people here who love them, who are standing up for them, we stand in their place. We're just going to keep fighting and keep inspiring the nation.
Yeah, Stephanie, what is, just for listeners, Stephanie would you know, be someone, and who anybody can do this. Anybody is welcome. Whatever skills that you have, bring it.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it is kind of sort of like survivors on an island of sane activism in a nation that seemingly has gone mad at the feet of a mad king. So there's a place for everybody down here. So come down, bring your skills. What is it you're good at? Everyone loves doing what they're good at. So bring what you have that you really feel good about and that you want to contribute, because it's there is a place for everyone, and the ranks are swelling day by day. What have you seen over the years that you've been involved with this, with the numbers of people getting involved?
I think the first like big round of activism that that I participated in was the Dreamers Act, and trying to get that passed in Oklahoma and Texas, and you know, it was a lot of rallying, but nothing like this. I mean, we've had this encampment is the first experience that I've ever had in an occupation movement. People are comparing it to Standing Rock, but it is nowhere near as like big or as powerful as that yet. But you know, we are growing. We got an art tent. We got an art tent a few days ago. It's a pop-up that we expanded. Someone just dropped a piano off next to our altar, which has its own tent. We have an engineering tent. We have a communications tent. We have a medical tent. We have multiple medical tents, mental health tents. We do a lot of skill sharing. So if you want to come here to learn skills and learn how to like improve yourself in ways that really help people, we have a wide range of individuals who are all showing solidarity, and the entire city supports us. Even if, you know, you can't, we need bodies, we need people here, we need, we just need support, like actual support. And we do get a lot of that on official protest days. But yeah, I mean, even if you just come in and you just want to sit night watch and, you know, smoke cigarettes out on a big couch, with a bunch of people around a fire while they like sizzle tofu bacon, you know, if that's your thing, we need you.
The almighty power of coffee, yeah, and cigarettes.
We have
and talk.
So much
talk.
Coffee. We have so much food. Thank you so much. If you can't be down here, please just buy us pizzas. Vegan pizzas, because the vegan pizzas run out faster than the meat pizzas, as we've noticed. But
we can make it happen.
Just like a stack
so
of pizza.
So there's gardens here. It's a living, breathing city. Down. How many people do you figure are here on a regular basis running the camp?
I'd say, I see about 50 regular faces. But like, you know, there's so much more, that like, you know, will come in and out. Some people will take breaks for days on end. Someone else will fill their place. It always seems like they're just kind of swapping in and out, and you become really close friends with these people, regardless of where they come from, or what they were doing before. Or even who they were before. We have a lot of houseless comrades. We call each other comrades sometimes, just for fun. But, you know, and they do some really important work here, and we take care of each other. And it's really humbling, because it reconstructs society in the minds of the people who are here, where it actually becomes unusual to leave for a little while, you know, to go back out to work, where everyone is just going about their daily business and, you know, not really aware of the situation in the moment, even though they might be aware of it as it is. And so when you come here, you start to realize that, like, oh, wait a second, there is something else out there, and there is actually something else that humanity is capable of. You know, we aren't sustainable. We do rely on donations. But also, if you just consider how much, you know, capital exists in the world, this kind of thing could be replicated anywhere.
That's right. Parallels to the farm workers, the farm workers strikes. This is kind of like a strike. It's a model for a general strike. Mm-hmm. What other encampments have you been in contact with, or groups overseas in France, England, for example? What's the greater community look like?
So again, this is my first occupation movement where I've committed long term and, you know, almost been here for a month. Yeah, I am aware of, like, again, Standing Rock and then the temporary mm-hmm. autonomous zones, or actually I think it's like in France, but it's been there for like 2 years, so I don't think it's temporary anymore. protecting, like natural farmlands from airport construction. You know, everyone has their reasons for occupying.
I know there have been occupations, there's been actions similar to this on behalf of immigrants trying to get across to England. The camps, the immigrant camps in France are just enormous. So I wanted to ask you, we're coming up on the midpoint of the conversation, and I want to sort of shift over and talk about the police, and how many police, for example, do you figure have been down here?
You know, every time we start something or like something serious goes down, we'll see a whole bunch of cars go into the building, and, you know, we'll document every single one of them and the drivers as well if we can.
You do document them.
Yeah, the license plates. A lot of them don't have license plates, and I don't think that's legal in Portland. They actually got a citation for their fence 2 days ago, which is pretty hilarious.
I love that. Oh, they need a building permit? That in Portland, that will never happen. If you need a building permit, you better be ready to wait a long time and fill out a lot of papers, because it's not going to happen overnight. Nope.
Exactly.
No fence for you. Oh, Yeah. Trying to get a building permit in Portland is another world.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about your communication with the police. Do you have, is there anybody delegated to be the communicator with the encampment and the cops?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our more experienced activists mm-hmm. who are tied into city council also do communicate with the DHS for specific reasons that I can't really mention right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, we do have those points of contact. They usually work off-site, but they do also show up for general assemblies and, you know, other important situations.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, Portland PD has been awesome through this. They haven't come by at all. You know, cheers to Sheriff Outlaw for that. I really appreciate that, because, you know, you see in the other encampments, they get beaten down by their own police force before they even get close to the DHS, and it's really sad that their own cities don't support them in protecting these people.
So I was wondering about the, on a more one-to-one level, talking to the police. I know I don't know, but I would guess that some police have questions. They might be first or second generation immigrants themselves, and they might have some feelings about what's been going on and what the extraordinary overreach of power illegally exerted on the civilian population. That's the thing to remember, is no matter what country you started out in, this is a civilian population, and to wage what is almost like a war against your own civilian population, I'm so surprised that there are not, that international laws, which have clearly been violated, that hasn't been confronted. And I wonder if anybody here is making an appeal to individual police to examine their conscience and look into their hearts and see, because you know, everybody, even people to the camp, we're all wearing a uniform. That's yours. This is mine. They've got theirs on. And, but we all have, you know, our hearts beat at times as one. I hate to sound like, you know, trivial, but have you talked to any of the police yourself?
So I bolted down here the first night that the DHS showed up it was in the morning that they showed up at the and destroyed our altar, and they arrested a lot of our friends who were locked up in front of the gates preventing cars from coming in and out. And they had a whole line of officers. I'm not sure where they came from, but I made two of them cry.
What did you say?
I said a lot of things.
Do you remember any of it?
Mostly along the, I mean, you know, just the truth and along the lines of like, you know, who raised you to think that this kind of behavior was okay? You know, I just was real with them. I'm like, you're in Portland, Oregon. Why don't you put down that badge? Come in here, get a hug, get some donuts, go to Voodoo, go to, you know, Blue Star, go to Pak Pak Noi. You're in fucking Portland, dude. Like, quit the bullshit. But, oh, excuse me. I am so sorry. Anyway, I told them a lot of things that, you know, I would never really tell another person in the way that I told them, but, and I did swear a lot, so I apologize, for that, but, I got through to two of them, and they had to tap out. One guy just stood there crying, because he was ashamed, and then he finally did leave, so it was nice to see that little bit of humanity in them. But I think who's left are people who do not have these reactions.
And, you know, approaching them in a way that not in a not non-shaming modality, so that in a more of a sharing. Have you worked on it with any of that?
I wouldn't know how to talk to these guys. The only time I ever see them, they're in armor. You know, obviously they feel strongly against what we're doing. Otherwise, they would have probably, like...
No, they can't. That's actually... Yeah. I mean, I'm not... It's definitely not on the side of police here, but, no, they... When they put the uniform on, they're supposed to be, like a neutral country. Some of them do. Some are violent because it's an occupation that tends to attract that. But there are people that you know, you might be able. I think communication is something that we really lack in this country. The irony is that there's all this masses of social media, like people on Instagram all the time. It's nothing but communication all over the place. And yet, we don't know how to communicate with each other. And this is an opportunity to communicate face to face with people that are more often than not identified as the enemy. And I want to, I think it's a consideration, maybe swell the ranks. What if these guys go home and say, you know what, I talked to some of those people down there at the camp. They were really pretty cool. I liked what I heard. That's something. Is it possible? I don't know.
They haven't shown any signs of being very friendly, so... It's kind of hard to reciprocate.
What about
the
guy that cried? Did you?
I actually apologized to him. I'm like, look, dude, I'm sorry. I don't like making people cry, even you, you know. And I don't even like you because you're doing some really awful stuff. And I am sorry. I have to be real with you, but like, I can't not be here right now. They're not supposed to talk to us. Some of them try sometimes, but we're also, you know, advised not to speak to them. For lots of reasons. But, you know, they chose this career. They made that decision and they could choose to do anything else. But
we have to take a break. I don't want to interrupt you. We've gone a little bit over the time for the first part of the conversation. I just want to let listeners know that they are listening to KBOO Portland, broadcasting live from the End Time Ice Encampment down here on McAdam Avenue, where we want to invite everybody to come down and see what's going on. It's a miraculous self-contained city that is with clearly certainly judging from the KBO setup, with outreach capability to the whole world. So, yes, if you are in France, get on a plane and come on over. And lend your voice, because it's all these voices together that make this happen, that do. Choose to power, you know, speak it. If we don't, who will, right? I think that's the key thing. Listeners, hello Portland, hello world. We are down here at the anti-ice encampment right now. The number of different mini encampments, it's kind of like an immigration Burning Man. We might almost burning deportee or burning immigrant. It's amazing to see so many people out, so much heartfelt enthusiasm, mostly young people. And then there are some of the, you know, hardcore people whose whole lives have been dedicated to speaking truth to power. And these days, of course, it's become increasingly dangerous. As protests itself in many states, there have been laws proposed that would make it illegal to protest. we've seen it time and again, and recently we've seen some of this protest pay off with Monsanto in big trouble, legal trouble in court, where they went down in flames. down in Roundup, as a partial result, I think that activism, the resistance, can take partial credit for that. If it were not for the resistance in this country, no one would know about the actions of Monsanto. No one would know about the actions of ICE. This is the way you engage the public and ignite the imagination so people are able to put themselves in the feet of the people, and put yourselves in the feet of those who are fleeing dangerous situations, impossible situations, situations that are unsafe certainly for children and indeed for adults also. To feel what they feel is essential. And that is the role of the participants in this encampment, is to take the public, take listeners by the hand and lead them in the footsteps of the people who are being persecuted right now in our name and on our dime. We're going to talk now with Jacob Soderberg, a lifelong activist and part of the tech resistance who's been down here off and on more or less constantly. Jacob?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, we've been down here. We have this KBU tent set up where we're broadcasting from. There have been a couple of scares where people were afraid that the camp was going to get raided yesterday and the day before. It hasn't happened. This is on TriMet property. And so as far as we know, this camp is legal. It's allowed by the city. And in fact, the fence that has been put up by ICE, by Department of Homeland Security, it's an 8-foot fence. Metal fence around their facility that they're renting, that they don't own. As far as we know, that is not permitted, not legal. And so people have been calling the city of Portland, a department of, I think, the Bureau of Development Services, in order to make complaints that fence itself is not legal. Yesterday, a city inspector came down to the camp to check out the fence and to take notes about it. So we don't know if that fence is going to be, if they're going to have to take it down or what the city is going to say. There were concerns about the lease itself. As of right now, the private developer that owns the property, that has leased it to ICE, has not gotten any citation for leasing the building to ICE. The city's lawyer apparently yesterday released a statement that he doesn't think there have been any violations by Department of Homeland Security in leasing that facility. There is a group right now of people from Occupy ICE down at City Council downtown, mm-hmm. challenging Mayor Ted Wheeler to actually revoke the lease of Department of Homeland Security because it violates Portland's declaration as a sanctuary city. There's also a group planning to go to the Human Rights Commission of the City of Portland this afternoon at 4:30. It is on 6th Avenue. I'm not sure of the exact address, but it's the Human Rights Commission meeting that is happening this afternoon, and they're asking the Human Rights Commission to get involved and to take and say that this building should not be leased to ICE, and that the people should not be detained here in the city of Portland.
So, you know, the Human Rights Commission in Portland, how busy could they possibly be that this is not a priority? This would be, I would expect, a priority.
And so I think we're probably out of time for this broadcast, but we have a web page on the KBU website, kbo.fm /OccupyICE. If you go to the front page and you see KBOO live from Occupy ICE, you can go there for updates. All of the broadcasts that we're doing from down here, and we're also doing webcasts that are on our web stream only, those are archived there. We're also doing transcripts for people who are hearing impaired who would like to see the interviews. One of the things that's been really exciting about this camp is the inclusivity, especially of people with disabilities, of people who are marginalized. The vigils have all been ADA interpreted with the ASL interpreted with the American Sign Language interpreters here at every event that's held in the camp. And so they've asked us also to do transcripts of any interviews that we do.
In Spanish?
And in Spanish, we have already a broadcast up in Spanish, and we are putting that transcript up as well. So that should be up today. So KBOO.FM/OccupyICE.
This is Chris Andre for KBOO Portland. We're signing off now. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening, and come on down.